Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Cecile Gower, editor of our US edition. How is it going, Cecile, over in the States?
Oh, things are going fine. It's a nice sunny day in Florida with a little breeze. Very lovely. Nice to be with you, Charlotte. I believe it's the first time that we're doing this together, isn't it?
It is, and it's great to talk to you. It's end of the day here, so you're looking incredibly fresh compared to me, even given that you've been going to every boat show under the sun. Great to see you. And I guess so we've both been out and about quite a bit. I had a great trip to see Winch the other day here in London. It's so funny, sometimes you forget with so many people so close to home, you forget to go and see them because they're only down the road from our Wimbledon office. They've got a studio in Barnes, very beautiful studio, some of you will know, right next to Harrison Eidsgaard's studio on the river, or I think they're about to move.
I've been there. It's lovely, actually. Really beautiful views.
Yeah, it's, you know, definitely one of the nicest offices I can think of, especially in terms of, you know, very light and looking out at all this kind of nature. It's stunning. But it was really interesting going around there. One of the things that I love was going to their materials library. They have this kind of room just full of boxes and boxes and boxes of all sorts of different things that the designers then apparently come and upend onto the table and sift through when they're working on their different projects. But they had some amazing sort of new sustainable materials. There was this incredible, like a palm leaf, a real palm leaf with embroidered dragonflies on it. That was just amazing.
Kind of flexible. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was amazing. It's one of those things you have to see to believe. It was kind of, it felt surprisingly tough given it's essentially a leaf. I guess it has some kind of coating on it. And then there are also some really awesome things by this company, Nature Squared, which most people probably have heard of, including like a tail made out of little overlaid guinea fowl feathers that was really delicate and clever. So it was great to see kind of, you know, behind the scenes for that sort of thing. And also I just love speaking to the designers and actually noticing asking them what sort of trends they've noticed. So they said they were, unfortunately, they were quite tight-lipped about most of their projects. But
As usual,
I was trying to kind of peek over their shoulder at different things. But they said they were working with a lot of kind of multi-generational families who wanted explorers and they wanted to spend a few months at sea at a time. So it's interesting that that's still carrying on. And they also said that they were dealing with a sort of younger, cooler, sort of more tech-focused clientele that were more interested in sustainability. So much so that they've taken on a new sustainability consultant whose sole job will be just that at Winch. So I was really pleased to hear that because it's something we often kind of speculate, will younger owners be more interested in this kind of thing? But the fact they've now got someone kind of full-time in that role makes me, you know, I'm pleased that that's actually happening and people are making the move, really.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear. It'll be fascinating to speak to this person eventually and find out how their approach to design may evolve as a result.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be interesting to see what they come up with kind of beyond materials, because we know that there are loads of interesting materials on the market, but there's so much more to making your yachting more sustainable than just kind of swapping out the odd bit of wood. That was interesting. And they also had one of the head designers were talking about the fact that kind of signature exterior lighting was becoming a really big thing, that, you know, there had been a period of time where it was maybe not so much in fashion and it was cooler to be a bit more under the radar, but that's definitely changed and people want to have this kind of signature look for their boat to mark it out at the marina at night. And I wondered kind of, given that you've seen so many boats, if you've seen any with a particularly amazing kind of outdoor lighting scheme. I remember, I think it was Richard Hadida's Oyster Lush. Doesn't that have kind of bright pink, neon pink lighting? I think it does.
I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did. It would match the pink whale on the transom.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not realize it was a new trend, but now that you mentioned it, there's quite a bit of lighting, and LED lighting has certainly made it possible to really improve on that end. And make it even more of a feature. Of late, I think one of the yachts that I can think of is the 55-meter Alia yacht, Awab, which was featured on the cover of our April issues. I remember that the designers at Ripak told me it had a huge lighting budget.
Really? And that was the client's request, was it?
Yeah, apparently. And also, I could Atomic. That's a 64 meter custom yacht that was built at VSY in Italy. When I saw the yacht for the article, I remember the captain told me that the boat had roughly 2.5 kilometers of LED light strips on board.
Yeah.
And outside, it underscore all the light strong features, including the big mast and a red mosaic pool. And then boardwalk, the fetch it, is ablaze with lights in the evening, from the water all the way up to the top. It is quite something. I got to see that up close because they were right across from us at the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show. Yeah, it lights up and down. And then another one of my favorite is Artifact. I spent some time on the boat for the article when the boat was delivered. And I remember the captain taking me on the tender at night in St. Lucia. And we took a very slow spin around the boat and it was all lit up. Not only is the light coming through the windows, but it's underlying all the very interesting architectural feature on that boat. So, yeah. And then 80 meter Bilgin, which is called now Savannah, is amazing, has an amazing lighting plan. I could go on. I love walking the docks in Florida at night sometimes, you know, the Keys or Fort Lauderdale or Palm Beach. Even the center consoles, you know, they have amazing lighting in there. With this LEDs nowadays, there's virtually an infinity of colors.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that you mentioned colors because I was speaking to the CEO of Luxury Project, Laura Pomponi, this week. I was speaking to her for our interiors book, and she was talking a lot about interior lighting, not external, but how it's an increasing request from clients to deal with the kind of, not only to have lights that you can dim up or down, but to have this, I think she called it dynamic white lighting, but where you can change the temperature of the light. So you can have a very cool kind of bright blue-white light for when you're making your, you know, when you're having your kind of dance floor area or whatever. And then you can change that to a very cozy, warm mood light for later, you know, earlier in the day or whatever. And I thought it was quite interesting. She was talking about clients of different nationalities wanting different things, like a lot of Middle Eastern clients.
Yeah.
And a lot of Middle Eastern clients wanted things either like bright or dark, and they wanted the contrast and they wanted to be able to make that happen on board, whereas other nationalities, you know, want different things. But that the new build boats where there isn't an owner yet, you have to have it kind of built in, you know, all the specs so that whoever buys it can have exactly what they want on board. And just she was talking about how the change in spotlight technology has changed recently, you know, over the past 5 years or so, that, you know, now they're doing these incredibly complex systems where the spotlights are really far recessed, so you can't see them and you can't even detect where the kind of, you know, where the glow is coming from. But even when you're sort of 4 centimeters away from the spotlights, you can't see the individual spots on them. It's still kind of very subtle. So, kind of a rapidly evolving area, and given the build time of yachts, it must be hard for them to kind of get the latest tech on board in time before it all changes.
Yeah, no, it's great to hear that it's becoming more than an afterthought. You know, with the Boat Design Innovation Awards, we have one of our judges, Sally Story, is a specialist in lighting.
Yeah,
and even on, you know, very beautifully done yachts, sometimes when we go around, she points out what's wrong with the lighting, and sometimes it's just you know, too obvious. It you know, it's spotlights are strange this way. They just light, you know, right underneath there, and it does nothing for you at all. It's too harsh often. So it's great to see that evolving.
Yeah, Laura was kind of saying in a way that the shadow is almost as important, because you want to have light in the right places and a contrast in other places to make it feel natural and real. And if things are too harshly lit, it all comes across a bit kind of fake. And but she says something which never occurs to me, that if you have the wrong lighting, you don't see things in the colours that they're meant to be. So if you have very harsh lighting, you know, your wood might look kind of ashy and grey when in reality it's a warmer colour or whatever. But you mentioned Atomic, and I think she's up for sale, isn't she?
Yes, she is. She's one of the recent additions to the market. And related to this, I saw an interesting bit of news on our Boat Pro news site this week. I believe, Charlotte, we will delve a little deeper in the first quarter brokerage numbers a little bit later. But this is interesting. In March, there were 60 new superyacht listings for a total listing value of almost 620 million euros. The most expensive new listing was a 73.1 meter Delta Marine superyacht Laurel at 69.5 million euros. Yeah, she's a special yacht. Laurel was built in 2006 at Delta Marine and was the largest yacht launched in the United States in more than 80 years when she was put in the water. And at some point, she was among the 50 largest yachts in the world.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So related to this, Charlotte, I have a trivia question for you. Maybe it's just too easy, but hey, do you know what is the largest yacht built in the U.S.?
You're getting ideas from Stuart, who loves to do a trivia question. It's always fun when you're the one asking, and also fun when you're the one guessing.
I don't want to be cruel, but I thought it was a kind of an interesting thing. But
I'm not going to guess. You tell me.
Okay, so she was delivered as Cakewalk, and she's now named Aquila. And she's 86.5 meter, and she was built by Director Shipyards. And Director, incidentally, is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year.
Yeah, amazing, amazing boat. Well, so that's really interesting.
So back to Laurel. She was designed by Donald Starkey and Delta. She has a superstructure in composite and a steel hull, which is a very interesting combination. Very few boats are built this way still today. She did several circumnavigations and was very private in her early years with all kind of speculation as to ownership. But she became much more public after she joined the charter market, as they do. She's been quite successful as a charter yacht, in fact, with a phenomenal crew and top-notch service. She had a massive refit in 2014, and although I've not kept up with all the refits, I'm sure she's been back to the yard regularly since. I remember going through the boat at a charter show, and the interior crew was very impressive.
I wonder if, I reckon her kind of charter factor is probably behind the reasons behind the asking price, no? If people know that if they buy it, she's going to be booked up for the without any difficulty, and they can command a high price for that, they're almost paying for the charter business rather than the boat.
Well, probably both. I mean, she's a very exceptional build and kept in really great condition. And then certainly her charter record is definitely an asset. So she's one of, she's the most expensive entry in March, but there were other high ticket listings. There was Atomic, as we mentioned. She was listed at $68 million or 62.3 million euros or thereabout. EIV at 37 million euros and Step One, $33.7 million or roughly 30.9 million euros. I'm not sure what this is about, but maybe owners are looking to capitalize on the high prices and shorter list times. What do you think?
Well, yeah, definitely. So the recent price rises in yachts is something Stuart and I discussed on the pod a few weeks ago. But it actually plays into, if you're interested in this kind of thing outside of the podcast, we've got a really interesting feature coming up in our June issue, which is talking about this kind of super yacht boom that we've seen over the past couple of years and the fact that there's been this tremendous uptick in the market, how it can last, if it will last, and how, you know, yacht prices have changed according to that. And in the piece, one of the sales managers at Camper & Nicholson's was quoted, and he said that, you know, if we're looking at the future, he said, the issue we'll have is that in most cases, owners have overpaid for the yachts compared to 2019 prices, and they will want to get their money back. But when and if the market slows down, listing prices will be higher than demand, and so this should start to decrease. So by the sounds of it, there are quite a few people out there who have ambitiously kind of, you know, gone for it, and why not put their yacht on at a high price, and people have bitten and gone for it. And they might live to regret that when it comes to selling it and they realize they're making maybe a significant loss. You know, hopefully you would think the time on board would make it all worthwhile, but I know that sometimes people are much more focused on the bottom line. So we'll see what happens. But I think definitely if you're buying, it's a time to be particularly doing your due diligence because lots of people are trying to kind of capitalize on this, this very high demand and not all of them are that scrupulous.
Absolutely. So how about we go to a few news bits from this week? Charlotte, what is the first news you'd like to share today?
Okay, well, first up is the news that FedShip last week delivered the new Callisto, which was formerly known as Project 709. This is a fully custom boat, 42.5 meters in length, so smaller than what FedShip has delivered in recent memory, but still a great yacht. She has an interior by Sino and an optimized hull form and can reach speeds of 21 knots. She was actually built for a repeat client of the shipyard, and the previous Callisto, which they also owned, was 65 meters in length. So interesting to see that they've gone for something smaller this time around.
Oh, yeah. I wonder why that is. Maybe they want a little less crew. I heard some owners kind of want to downsize for that reason. Or maybe they'll be towing their tender rather than having a huge garage.
Yeah, so we look forward to seeing the new Callisto in due course. In other news, the next story is that Turkish shipyard RMK has announced it has started construction on a 65-meter sloop yacht designed for global exploration in compliance with requirements of ice class. The design of the ER-65 is by Canadian designer Ivan Erdiveshki of ER Design in Vancouver. He describes the yacht as a timeless classic. Quite a bold description. He wanted a classic-looking yacht, he said, not a typical explorer. Erdiveshki says it looks relatively simple, but it was a very big challenge to create a yacht with classic looks and all the volume that's needed for a typical explorer. One of the tricks, he says, he employed was to create a very high freeboard in combination with a continuous shear line that enhances the length of the boat. The yacht actually has two full decks under the main deck, plus a tank deck, and construction has just begun, so we look forward to seeing that one as well. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it will be a very interesting boat. I really like how he disguised the size of the boat with this trick of, increasing the number of lower decks and hiding that with a freeboard. Very interesting.
We're definitely seeing a lot more of these. I wonder if the Explorer yacht as a different looking kind of yacht is really out of fashion, because more and more we're seeing these Explorers that they say the owner wants an Explorer that didn't look like an Explorer, or they designed an Explorer that was also felt luxurious. So I think the market for kind of really rugged explorers is, maybe moving slightly.
Yeah. Well, they have their fans, but it's maybe a smaller group of people.
For sure.
So also in Turkey, Mengiye Yachts in Tuzla has launched 48-meter NB101, the first hull in the new Virtus 47 line. The yacht, which will be officially christened La Vie, is the longest motor yacht built by the yard to date. La Vie's exterior has been designed by VYD Studio with an interior by Leonardo Santi Design. Key features include a large owner's apartment, a huge main saloon with twin unfolding balconies. The owner's suite also features an unfolding balcony as a standard, but prospective owners looking to buy a Virtus 47 can opt out if they wish. I don't know why you would, but why not?
I was going to say.
We published an article on the Virtus 44, the smaller sister ship. And that was a finalist for the Boat Design Innovation Awards in 2020. I liked that boat, and it really looked like the yard was on the right trajectory with this new series. So I do hope we get to see this new boat.
Yeah, you'll be first in line.
I hope so. And there's another little tidbit that I found interesting this week. The Race Bird, the first electric racing foiling boat designed for the E1 series, which is the world's first and only electric powerboat racing series, took its first flight recently. Back in February, I flew on a foiling electric boat. That one was by Candela. It's the C7, they call it. It really was an eye-opening experience for me, and I'm really interested in all of this. So this Race Bird is an innovative electric foiling race boat designed by Norwegian designer Sophie Horn, a woman designer, I like that, and her company Seabird Technologies. And she worked with Brunello Acampora of Victory Marine. This is a prototype, and it's being tested for the E1 World Championship due to launch in 2023. This will surely boost interest in electric boats and the technology. I think that's an interesting thing that might trickle down to the rest of the boating industry.
Yeah.
So the design was inspired by birds, and of course it's on foils. It's about 7 meter long, weighs about 800 kilos, and does 50 knots.
Wow.
So while it's made for racing specifically, again, I think it will be something that could inspire other manufacturers to do things to boost the speed and the range of electric boats. We recently published an article on electric tenders, and I just noticed that it had been uploaded on the website recently. So if you're interested in that, go take a look on boatinternational.com.
Yeah, I remember. I love that piece. It's a really good, there's lots of reviews in there. There's lots of comparisons, but The main thing that struck me, you know, people, when people talk about electric tenders and if they'll ever talk or take off, they talk about the range a lot and that kind of thing. But something I hadn't expected is they look really cool. This new host of designs, like, they look awesome. They look like something you would want to be seen kind of whizzing around in. And I think we shouldn't underestimate the, like, you know, a really cool design, a really silent boat, something that seems very modern and kind of forward thinking. I think, I really hope they take off as much as they could do.
Yeah, the luxury is really in the sound, you know, the lack of noise and also not polluting. It's nice. At least, you know, not exhaust fumes or anything like that.
Yeah, the piece kind of commented that there were certain places that you can go in an electric tender that you can't go in a normal tender. So, you know, having that access to really beautiful, unspoiled places and knowing that you're kind of, you know, you're not spoiling the environment yourself is quite an important thing, I think. So you touched on it earlier, Cecile, and you were right that this week we're looking at brokerage sales in Q1 and kind of comparing this year to right back to 2019. So Raphael, our data guru, has been wrangling figures from different brokers all week so that we've got the most up-to-date information for this year. And this is going to be a real challenge of my ability to read out very big numbers. So I'm hoping you're going to shout at me if I get some of this wrong.
Good luck. Those are big numbers.
Yeah, big, big numbers. Big super yachts and big numbers. So if we look at the past 4 years, well, sales is an easy one. In Q1 of 2019, there were 88 boats. 2020, 92. 2021, 150. In 2022, 155. So a clear kind of steady and sustained rise in sales. Then if we look at the total asking price, and this is in euros, so in Q1 of 2019, the total asking price was 1.091 billion. In 2020, Q1, obviously start of the pandemic, so there's a dip here, it was 763,642,517. In Q1 of 2021, that goes back up to 1.349 billion. And in Q1 of 2022, goes right up to 1.662 billion. So,
wow.
Yeah, up and up and up. So you can see why we're concerned about a drop because, you know, that's a real escalation.
Hmm.
So if we then look at the average asking price, again in euros, in Q1 of 2019, it was 12,404,044. In Q1 of 2020, it was 8 million. So another dip, as you'd expect, 8,300,462. In Q1 of 2021, it was back up, average asking price of 8,998,478. And in Q1 of this year, that's gone right back up to 10,725,354,000.
So still under Q1 of 2019.
Exactly, still below Q1 of 2019, but climbing back up there. Then if we look at the total LOA in meters, in Q1 of 2019, that was 3,159. Q1 of 2020, it was 3,234. Q1 of 2021, it was 5,354. And in Q1 of 2022, it was 5,526. So, yeah, total LOA has gone right up. But if you look at the average LOA, I think that's quite interesting because that doesn't move basically at all. If you look at Q1 of 2019, it was 35.9 meters. Q1 of 2020, it was 35.2 meters. Q1 of 2021, it was 35.7 meters. And again, in Q1 of 2022, 35.7 meters.
Wow. Yeah, very stable.
Yeah, exactly. Then if we look at the total gross tonnage, if we look at Q1 of 2019, it's 35,129. If we look at Q1 of 2020, it's 25,205. If we look at Q1 of 2021, it's right up to 45,269, and then Q1 of 2022, almost the same, 45,158 total gross tonnage. Average gross tonnage has changed as well. So in Q1 of 2019, it was 399. In 2020, 274. In 2021, back up to 302. And in 2022, 291. So gone back down slightly. Average age is quite interesting because the boats are seeming to get younger. in terms of how old they are. So Q1 of 2019, the average age was 13.84 years. Q1 of 2020, it was 12.19. Q1 of 2021, it was 12.73. But Q1 of 2022 is 11.93. So I don't know whether that's new yachts coming onto the market that's bringing that down. But something is. In terms of which of these, you know, motor versus sail, the split's fairly similar as you go along. So 2019, it was 79 motor, 9 sail. 2020, it was 74 motor, 8 sail. 2021, it was 144 motor, 6 sail. And then Q1 of 2022, 145 motor and 10 sail. So sailing yachts not really climbing up there. And interestingly, in terms of, you know, which of these are semi-custom, that's definitely kind of crept up or sort of, yeah, worked its way up. In 2019 in Q1, 66% of the boats sold were semi-custom. In 2020, 81% of the boats sold were semi-custom. In 2021, 76% of them were semi-custom. And in 2022, 78% of them were semi-custom. So a big rise in semi-custom boats, selling almost 10% more in 2022 than in 2019, sorry. And a younger average age of boats, and a big and sustained rise in total asking price. So now if we go on and take a look at sales per size category, that's quite interesting too. In 2019, they sold 36 boats that were 24 to 30 metres, 33 boats that were 30 to 40 metres, 12 boats that were 40 to 50 metres, 3 boats that were 50 to 70 metres, and 4 boats that were 70 metres plus. Then in 2020, in the 24 to 30 metres category, there were 35, so just one less than the year before. 33 in the 30 to 40 metres category, so the same number. 19 in the 40 to 50 metre category, so a few more. 5 in the 50 to 70 metres category, a couple more. And none in the 70 metre plus category. Maybe not surprising because of the pandemic. People were kind of delaying projects, putting them on hold, whatever. Then if we look at last year, the 24 to 30 metre bracket, there were 59. The 30 to 40 metre bracket, 55. 40 to 50 metres, 20. 50 to 70 metres, 10. And 70 metres plus 6. So all those boats were back out of the sheds. And then if we look in Q1 of this year, there are 62 boats sold in the 24 to 30 metres bracket, 54 in the 30 to 40 metres, 26 in the 40 to 50 metres, 8 in the 50 to 70 metres, and 5 in the 70 metre plus. So interesting to see that bottom end, the kind of 24 to 30 metres going up and up from 36 in Q1 of 2019 to 62 now. And lastly, maybe we end on the largest sales from each year. So I always love looking at these. This one is a bit of a humdinger that then skews all the stats for the rest of the year. But in Q1 of 2019, it was the 125 meter Jag.
That's why.
Yeah, okay. Kind of throws everything out of whack. In Q1 of 2020, it was the 68 meter Aurora Borealis. In Q1 of 2021, it was the Darman Custom 75 Hybrid. She was 72 meters, now she's 75. And in Q1 of 2022, it was the Bilgin 263. So you can read all about these yachts on boatsinternational.com, of course. But the most recent, the Bilgin 263, was an 80-meter, and it was Blue Water Yachting who introduced the buyer. And the yacht will be able to cruise at a maximum speed of 19 knots, powered by a pair of 2,560 kilowatt engines, and with an economical range of 6,000 nautical miles. And the interior will be by H2 Yacht Design. So some good news in those stats. Firstly, that the good health of the market that we saw in 2021 is confirmed. The stats back up what everyone was saying and feeling, which is good news because last year was a record year in many respects. And it also proves, like we were saying just now, the recent success across the smaller categories between 24 and 40 metres. Sorry, there's been a real improvement there. And also between 40 and 50 metres in 2022. While the success of the semi-custom series is also cracking on. But yeah, like I said, one thing to mention is that the asking price figures for 2019 are pretty skewed by the very expensive asking price of Jag, So you have to take those with a bit of a pinch of salt.
Yeah, definitely. Now that you mention it, it does explain that big difference. Well, I think it's interesting to see that the smaller end of the market is doing quite well. For some time, I think that particularly the 40-meter to 50-meter segment was kind of soft, and particularly when it comes to custom yachts. But I guess with semi-production boats in that category being readily available for a shorter build period, it's nice to see that that size range is back in popularity. So that's definitely an uptick in that segment, I think.
It'd be interesting to see how some of these semi-custom series do, because we've mentioned a few on the podcast of, you know, boat builders that have really hit on a formula and then they've been flying off the shelf. So I wonder if we'll see more of those designs going forward.
I'm sure. And as we've seen last week with the 80-meter limited editions by Damen,
Exactly. Actually
semi-production or so-called series yacht. I'm sure Damen Amels would not like me to call it a series, but nonetheless, it's a pre-engineered platform and it can be considered, I guess, semi-production. So they're getting much larger, but I think it's a good formula because people don't have to wait quite as long. So
yeah,
I don't think it's exactly going to go away.
Wow, we'll keep an eye on that. So that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Boat Briefing, which is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to check out our big boat interview shortly. Our travel editor, Georgia Boscawen, sat down with Bengt and his son, Philip of Beckway, to hear how they came to create a super luxury hotel in the Grenadines. They chatted about what it really takes to live out that fantasy of leaving everyday life and building a beachfront Caribbean hotel, kind of being faced with those moments where you think, oh my God, what have I taken on? But Bengt and his wife also came to own the 34-meter Benetti Star of the Sea, which they travelled halfway around the world to collect, and George says that's a fascinating story. So we look forward to hearing that. In the meantime, don't forget to like and subscribe. Drop us an email if you'd like to, and if you're celebrating the Easter weekend, have a lovely time. See you next time.